Drive Time, welcome back to the show. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp number, 47913, if you still do the SMS thing. Still waiting for those pictures if you're in the R300, apparently, bumper to bumper because of alleged crime scene. If you see anything untoward on the roads, send us the pictures. As the Turkish government continues its military operations in northern Syria against the SDF, a major political shift in alliance has emerged after the Syrian Democratic Forces, formerly the YPG, has announced a deal with Syrian forces. It's getting complicated. Online, a spokesperson for the Kurdish human rights group in South Africa, Mahmoud Patel. Mahmoud, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, Shafiq. How are you? And greetings to all your listeners.
I'm good, thank you. Alhamdulillah. Now, how do we understand all of this? The organization used to be called the YPG. It became the SDF. It was fighting with the United States forces, ostensibly against ISIS. It had ISIS troops or ISIS supporters in its prisons, apparently. Turkey now has invaded northern Syria, held by YPG stroke SDF, saying it wants to have some control over this territory so Syrians can come back into this territory and ostensibly to push the Kurds off to one side. I'm struggling to understand all the dynamics in this. What is actually happening?
Okay, Shafiq, basically last year the Turkish intent to occupy northeastern Syria, which was filled in the last few years by the autonomous administration, by the Kurdish troops and the Kurdish administration. The SDF you are mentioning is comprised of the YPG and the YPJ. YPJ are the women battalions and the YPG, but effectively they are all part of the SDF. And what has happened since Afrin, which Turkey invaded last year and has occupied since, similarly for the rest of what is called Rojava currently, Turkey wants to occupy, firstly by claiming to have a safe corridor, which it was supposed to jointly patrol with the U.S. And then last Sunday, the White House issued a statement to say all U.S. troops will be withdrawing. And that then gave the green light for Turkey to occupy under the pretense that it wants to fight terrorism, Daesh, and so on. But the issue at hand is Turkey itself was complicit in allowing the troops and militias loyal to ISIS, Daesh, as well as other groupings through their borders to fight the Kurds in that territory. So subsequent to that, a lot of the indigenous people that are there, those that are Shengali, Ezedi, Nabatean, Alawi, and so on, including Arab tribes, came under the banner of the SDF. And they fight side by side with the SDF troops for the past few years against Daesh, and then the just at the conclusion, militarily, of the defeat of Daesh, currently in Rojava, I was there recently in July, the rebuilding of Kobani, Kamishlo, and all those cities is currently underway. And all the peoples of the region are contributing to that. So it's not just a Kurdish thing or a Kurdish experiment. The people who are there on the ground are working together. So what has happened, Turkey fears a lot of those ideas coming over, because the Turkish border of about a few hundred kilometers is very visible when you are in Kamishlo. And as you travel down to Amude, which is on that border, you can see the concrete wall there. Just over that wall is where the women's village is on the side of Rojava as well. I was at Kamishlo and then through to Kobani, and where the last stand against ISIS was, in a matter of 20 meters, that's where the Kurdish border is, the Turkish border. And a lot of eyewitness accounts by journalists and others who were inside Turkey at the time have given a lot of evidence to say that Turkey allowed them to encircle the civilians there as well as the Kurdish fighters there and the SDF fighters. So the YPG, YPJ, essentially a group of men and women who've come together because of the adverse conditions on the ground to defend their territory and so on. And the vacuum was created when the U.S. came in and wanted to create a regime change in Syria with Assad and so on. And in that space of time, the mobilized Kurdish forces, together with the others, came together and started to and eventually declared self-autonomy recently. So essentially, broadly speaking, that is what is happening. But as we speak now, currently there are around almost 300 civilians that are officially documented as being killed by the Turkey and its proxies. Currently, we've had a convoy of journalists yesterday confirmed bombed, many of whom have passed on. A hospital, infrastructure, water, electricity have been bombed. So if Turkey genuinely is concerned about that, they wouldn't have bombed prisons where ISIL combatants have been currently held in detention. And we have a refugee camp there in Al-Hasaka that has 100,000 people. So the recent bombings now has made it possible for them to flee, regroup, and a lot of the ISIS sleeper cells now will be emboldened to continue doing what they were doing. So the incursion into that region doesn't augur well, and it's not going to dissipate or contain the threats that Turkey claims that it wants to subdue. It's more territorial, and in some regions we've received reports that they have gone in over 30 kilometers into. So the recent agreement with Syria by the SDF in the early hours of this morning and over the weekend was because they don't have any air support. Because on the ground, Turkish forces will struggle against the SDF forces. But that is not the only issue. The issue is the SDF forces were also providing support, logistical and other, to the camps, the refugee camps, maintaining the prison structures, contributing to the rebuilding. And with this invasion, they now have to focus on the fighting. So a lot of those other will now be very, very explosive camps and so on. So that currently is where things stand.
Okay, trying to understand this whole thing from all sides, not the easiest of things at all.
No.
So are you saying that this zone is not just exclusively what one could very loosely label a Kurdish zone? You've mentioned that there are lots of other Shingali, other peoples, also living in this particular area as well, that in fact it's actually a mixed zone more than anything else.
Correct. In the cities, towns, and villages in that region, you get different ethnic groups as well. And not only ethnic differences, there's also the religious. There are Christians there, Muslims, Sunni, Shia as well, secular, all kinds in the region. Some of the cities are majority Azeri. And as you travel and you see, recently they formed an interfaith council as well, where all the leaders have come together. There was actually a lot of progress made in the last 8 years amongst all the different ethnic groups to find a better way in which to deal with what was happening with them, with the atrocities committed by ISIL, Daesh, ISIS, and other groups as well that were latching onto that as well from the proxies in Syria and so on, as well as the differences in languages too. A lot of them speak Arabic, there's Kurdish spoken as well. So it's not just easy to just say, no, it's exclusively Kurdish. In the towns, the majority are the Kurdish, but substantial numbers of Arabs and so on are there as well. And a lot of the Arab leaders have come together, and there was an official statement given over the weekend as well, where they fully support the SDF troops as well.
So, yeah.
So it would be very, it would be a very generalized approach to just say it's only Kurds and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it sounds like a very complex situation. Now, the equation that seems to be emanating from Turkey is that they are saying that they're trying to target PKK. And the Turkish argument, how I understand it, and I could be understanding it incorrectly, says that PKK equals YPG. There's no mention of YPJ, which equals Syrian Democratic Forces. So they're saying that the PKK is at the core of this, and they are not happy with the PKK notions of separatism. How does this flow into the narrative?
Okay, firstly, the PKK recently, in 2017, the Court of Appeal in Brussels upheld a decision where it said that the PKK is not a terrorist organization. Secondly, the United States has listed the PKK like it had Hamas until recently on the FTO terror list. And by association through NATO then, obviously NATO members would look at PKK in that way. But here you have a Belgian High Court decision, a Court of Appeal that says the PKK is not a terrorist organization. That's important. Additionally, Turkey's claim that the SDF or YPG/PKK, there are no PKK fighters in that part. I mean, if the SDF fighters are from the local indigenous people who in the last few years were victims of all kinds of invasions, fighting and war. I mean, some of the fighters are 22 years old, 23 years old. They are cut off from where the PKK fighters are based in the camps that Turkey is currently bombing as well. In June, it bombed, used drones, weapons on it, and killed senior leaders, two of them as well. So that is happening more in the Kandil region, but where the SDF forces are, there's nothing to do with PKK, because that then would be, that doesn't make sense. The U.S. has the PKK on the terror list, and if what Turkey says is true, then how is it they entered an alliance with them on the face of it, you know? So on the ground, there's no PKK present. Yes, there is the presence of Öcalan's pictures where you go. Yes, there is the thinking of equality, egalitarianism, and the respect for human rights and so on amongst the SDS. If you go there, you see it. And so the statement by Turkey that it is, it's not accurate at all.
Now, if we're trying to understand the whole situation again, Turkey is saying, again, I stand open to be corrected, and the ambassador will be on air after 5, so I can ask her some of these questions, that they're saying that they want a zone, I'm just using this word selectively,
sure,
where Syrian refugees can filter back into Syria, and I think the idea of this zone is 30 kilometers, as you've said, and I think the border between Syria and Turkey is almost 900 kilometers, so it's quite an extensive area. They want to make it easier for Syrians to come back home. Does that make sense?
Look, with the invasion of Afrin as well, currently there's been a lot of ethnic cleansing taking place, putting in refugees that were elsewhere to make and ensure that the towns, Kamishlo, Amude, Kobani, Semlenka, Derek, would then have populations that are majority Arab, and the Kurdish then would become the minorities there. Then by implication, politically, they become a minority. That is one intent. They want to depopulate the area of Kurds and put in, they are saying they want to put Syrian refugees there. But that territory used to belong to Syria. So in the first place, it's for the Syrians to decide that, not for Turkey to go in a sovereign country and then say, but they want to decide for them. That is incorrect. If those refugees are there and Turkey has a problem, because Erdogan was on record to say that he'll open up the door so they can flood Europe again. But that is, the rhetoric and demagoguery starts to set in. But the point here is, it's a depopulation, make the Kurds a minority, similar to Palestine, where you want to keep the right of return not in the equation, and you want the Palestinians to become a minority, and you put in settlers everywhere. It's a similar thing. It's nothing new in that way, because why must Syria be kept out of that as well? Rightfully speaking, Syria should have had to say more so than Turkey, because Turkey is now leaving its borders and deciding where they're going to take refugees and settle them. The United Nations isn't even involved in that process at all. So the incursion by Turkey into a sovereign state, if they don't recognize the autonomous administration, is also against international law. And Turkey's legion, more than 2,800 times it's violated, documented by the Council of Europe and the European Court of Human Rights. And they were condemned over 2,000 times since 1959 on breaches of international law. So factually speaking, those are the issues. And the argument that they need to put those, I think it's a weak argument, because on the ground, when you go to the cities and towns, it's different. They're not vacant places waiting to house people there. They are established communities there with people dating back for decades and centuries that are living there and established there as communities. to just bring in refugees, then what are they doing? It's going to create more chaos than anything.
Do you think that Turkey is facing an election? Turkey's population is getting restive because of the amount of refugees, which, yes, Turkey has very generously taken in. Could it be old-fashioned politics? I don't know.
Well, Shafiq, I think you are hitting the nail on the head. It is old-fashioned politics. It's a question of resources, a question of power. It's a question of maintaining the status quo. What do you do? There's troops at home. There's... it's NATO's number two on the military. But the important thing here is Erdogan lost major cities in the recent elections. He lost Ankara, he lost Istanbul, he lost against opposition. He's even got increased criticism from his former senior members. Abdullah Gül, his former cabinet members that have left him as well. There was talk of them forming a new political party as well. So he needs to find a way of surviving. And the proceeds of the oil that used to be funneled through ISIL and Turkey benefited from that. A lot of those things and the offspring there too must be looked after and protected. And I don't think AKP under Erdogan would just necessarily want it to go. So essentially I feel, based on what has come to us and is what has been on the ground there from our friends that send us information, one gets a sense that the United States and Turkey have done a deal, basically, because a month ago, 2 months ago, Turkey was buying the S-400s from Russia. It mounted them. They're fully operational. Simply because the U.S. didn't want to listen to them for what they were requesting. I mean, the U.K. has sold them over £1 billion pounds in arms in the last few years as well. These countries are saying now they are not going to send any further arms, but they were dealing with Turkey right up as we speak. Israel itself, Turkey does a lot of business with them. It hasn't stopped. So the rhetoric of using Islam and standing up is one. Two, is it just survival, political, to remain? And it's more so that. And the charm campaign on the African continent with Turkey and so on, that is well known now. I mean, even locally, through the different NGOs, through the different organizations and so on. And the idea is also to put up a favorable impression of the state of Turkey.
Mahmoud Patel, Kurdish Human Rights Group, thanks for chatting to us about what's happening in northern Syria, southern Turkey. After five, we talk to the Turkish ambassador, trying to understand what is happening in that part of the world. Mahmoud Patel, thank you.
Shukran. Thank you, Shafiq.